In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Back we go again into the fringe. Past guest Allison Cruz was one of the top UFO researchers in the Northeast United States, consistently bringing compelling video evidence of UFOs near her home. She lives about 20 miles east of Pittsburgh. The UFO hotspot was close to the Laurel Highland Ridgeline, a heavily wooded area characterized by a series of rolling hills with deep valleys in between. It's known to be mineral-rich, with lots of coal deposits. Allison and her daughter started noticing what looked like orange fireballs and lights in the trees. They also observed some of these objects needed to feed off power lines. At one point, she described the activity as, quote, an invasion level in the number of craft that are coming here. They're getting bolder. They're getting sloppier. They're letting us see them. The intimidation ramped up as well. In 2009, a former Homeland Security agent randomly called and ordered her to make her YouTube videos private or delete them. And someone hacked into her channel and deleted the majority of her videos. A few years ago, the activity near her home went from invasion level to moderately quiet, anomaly-free nights. What happened? Well, we check back in with Allison Cruz to talk about the departure of the visitors and her trip to see the Hesdalen Lights in Norway. This is part one of the interview. Allison, welcome back to Another News.
Hi, how are we doing?
I'm good. Well, it's good to check back with you because a lot's happened since you were on the show in 2012 and also since the UFO footage presentation we did at Theater 80 back in December of 2012. Would you give listeners, please, a recap of how you began to notice activity near your property and then your realization that what you're observing might be alien in nature?
Well, it's hard to get a beginning date on that because apparently power outages in the middle of the night at my house, I found out later on, were linked to it. And I actually busted one of these spheres, what people call orbs or something, not the dust ones that people get, you know, with just a photograph, but where you could actually physically see a sphere that were typically around soccer ball size to basketball size, sometimes lit, sometimes blinking. Those turned out to be, I guess, little probe-type things for what has to be alien crafts. Yeah. I think the first thing was with my daughter. She was sneaking, talking to a kid on the phone at like 3:30 in the morning, and she saw what she described the next day as a weird plane that was glowing, and it came up and hovered over the neighbor's house that's in front of ours, about 500 feet away down in a valley. It's a tree-lined forest kind of area. And when I told her to draw it, she drew a saucer shape. And then she said there was white lines either going around or going back and forth on the bottom, and the whole thing was pulsing, like glowing, you know, like a slow pulse, red. And she said it came up through the valley and hovered over the neighbor's big house down there. It sits below. And that had me kind of alarmed, you know. And I said, I think you saw a UFO. I mean, people have only talked about these things. That'd be neat to see one. I was in astronomy club and never saw anything, you know, more bland than, you know, rocks, meteorites and stuff. So actually, we didn't sleep for about 2 weeks. We slept in the living room, which is glass on three sides, about 25 foot long, you know, alpine style. And we didn't see anything, so life went back to normal. But then I was growing, and this was in summer, like July, June or July. And by October, I was grilling burgers out on the grill and saw two huge, you know, they could be like planet size, you know, like Jupiter but a little larger than Jupiter, and another smaller one next to it, but they were twinkling like stars, and planets don't twinkle like stars. So I was scratching my head thinking, what? And I recall that, you know, being in astronomy, that Jupiter and Venus were going to be in conjunction like a month after that. So I'm scratching my head looking at it, and then one of them just blinks out. Then the larger one just fades out, blinks out. And I thought maybe a black cloud went over. There had been some spotty clouds in the sky. But nothing, you know, it didn't come back again. And I thought, well, maybe this is one of these UFOs people talk about. So I started looking online, and, you know, boom, you see going back decades, even the 60s, it seemed to be a flap. The major flap started, you know, of people seeing regular sightings, including the same county that I live in Pennsylvania, where the famous Kecksburg crash happened. It's in my county. Just paying attention to all that, and then wondering, hey, maybe these power cuts in the middle of the night that make my burglar alarm, you know, wake me up because there was a power interruption. I wondered whether that had anything to do with it, which I later found out it did, because I bought a tri-field EMF meter, the NEM2 model. They have a specific sum setting, and that one is a combination of, I forget the two fields it combines, but the people who made that actually told me that that is specifically to detect alien craft or UFOs, whatever.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
No, it's not. It wasn't cheap, but to have peace of mind, you know, something that, you know, was seen outside of your house under, you know, 500 feet away, you know, it makes you sleep better. Let's put it that way. But so one night, actually, she came in. I had it in the bedroom next to the bed. And she came in. She goes, Mom, that meter thing's going crazy. So I went in, and it was. It was pegging in sound higher than the meter's limit of the needle. The needle was pegged, but yet the sound went even higher in pitch. So something was so strong that the meter, the needle range couldn't even handle it. So I whipped open the window. I had kept a camera next to the bed because of the thing my daughter saw. And I just tried to leave cameras. You know, I had a camcorder out on in the living room, which had the best view. But I left another camera in next to the bed. So I just whipped the window open and just started snapping random flash pictures outside. And I ended up catching what looks like a amberish orange streak. In 1/60th of a second, it had moved in the photograph as a long orangish streak towards our electric meter box on the outside of the garage below the bedroom window that had been, I don't know, 15, 20 feet long. And, I mean, it's a head-scratcher. You know, you look and you go, what is that? And the size of it, you know, my cat's footprints were in the snow, and I could tell that, you know, the size of it is matching what later would be caught on surveillance cameras that have Sony chipsets I put out in the yard facing the house because I wanted to see what's coming close to the house. And it confirmed these little spheres that are about soccer ball to basketball size average kept coming, dropping from the sky and whizzing around, and they would go like and look in our windows. Now, doesn't that alarm you, you know? It's something unknown and obviously is not dust. You know, I was blowing off other people's pictures that, oh, they just got dust on their, you know, hovering near their lens, you know, and the flash of the camera is lighting it up and making it show up. But now I wasn't so sure. Well, that started a big, you know, I didn't have the proper camera equipment. I tried to film a wiggling orange sphere that we could see while we were watching TV, and all of us, me and my daughter and my guy, we ran outside on the porch, and all I have is a pretty much a black screen with me cussing that nothing's showing up in the and that was like the $250 camcorder. So, I mean, after looking online, thank goodness for the internet, because there's so many people that are, were already bitten by the bug, having seen stuff themselves, that they already had tried a bunch of stuff too. And one guy told me, he said, just go for the good camera that has a Sony Exmor chipset in it with the low lux setting. And it was a big jump to go from a $250 camera to a $1,250 camera. But I was so glad I did after that, because I could actually film these weird lights that I was seeing that looked like fireballs down in the woods.
Would the low light setting slow things down on the camera?
Some cameras do slow the frame rate down, but this one didn't. This one supposedly removes the IR filter, allowing it to be totally a night shot mode. Apparently there's some kind of filter that covers, and that's why you get color. But when this IR cutout filter is removed, then it sees a broader spectrum, including infrared. Oh, and then let me go to the next thing I bought. At Sam's Club, somebody had returned a military-grade, said on the box, military-grade infrared surveillance camera. It was just one in a box, but it had been $300, and they marked it down to like $80 because it was missing a cable or something. So I actually bought that, came home, and I had a hot tub in the yard, and we kept seeing what looked like, you know, real fast drops of, if it could be water, in a camera, you know, when you see water drops when you're filming on a camera that size. But we were seeing big things with our eyes while we were in a hot tub, and then something would glow in the woods and it looked like fire. So, I mean, you think you're getting a brain tumor or something because you see all these weird things, little white whizzing around things and things that look like fire in the woods. It sounds insane, you know. So when I saw this at Sam's Club, I said, well, it couldn't hurt, because if we're not seeing things, it'll be recorded on video. So I did. I hooked it up just to a regular VCR, because I didn't want to go and spend all this extra money on, you know, things that might not matter, or you're insane or something.
Sure.
But anyway.
Let me stop you there for a minute. What year would you say this was?
2009.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So I stuck it on a ladder. You know, I didn't want to hardwire it or anything. You know, and I stuck it on a ladder and I pointed it towards the woods that all these flashes of light are seeing what looked like fire in the woods were showing up. And it caught even more than that because of the infrared, and had real strong illuminators on it. The infrared illuminators went out about 250 feet, which is, you know, pretty long for a surveillance camera. It was a good one. Like I said, it was a $300 one. But I still, it was summertime, so I still had to write that anything showing up off is weird dust, or, you know, a bug getting too close to a lens or something. It wasn't until it was below freezing. It was like 13 degrees out Fahrenheit, and the same things happen, and, you know, a thing dropping from the sky, stopping and looking like it's looking at the camera, and then flying off the screen. And then things hopping over to the same patch of woods where fireballs would be seen. And I had even written them off as like, maybe there's leaves in the woods that are got a red tinge to them, and it's a plane further, you know, beyond a farther hill, and their plane's headlights are showing through these leaves and changing the color and making them look orangey red, whatever. I mean, anything, you know, to debunk it. I was trying to debunk these things. And I even had one guy tell me that there's meteor particles dropping from the sky all the time, la, la, la. Hmm. And I thought, oh, okay, well, maybe, you know. You shouldn't be able to see that with our bare eyes, though. And what it turned out to be, just to accelerate everything, because I actually caught one of these things that were fireballs. I actually drove around. There's a golf course on the other side, and I saw a swirling ball of plasma-like material. And I was like, this is what, what we've been seeing through the trees. Oh, my God, what is this? And I'm not crazy, because here it is, and I filmed it. And I actually ended up on the golf course path in my SUV trying to chase it through the golf course. And, you know, they're up in the air and they can go, you know, over rocks and hills and anything they want to, apparently. And I ended up on the other side and I saw this thing get super bright and expand in size and flaring up. You know, I thought it was going to explode. And when the light dimmed down, it started flashing like a plane. And I thought, oh my God, this is perfect. Whoever this is has figured out that they can camouflage themselves by simply mimicking any or nav lights that they see us using. And people would dismiss it.
Right. Anyone would dismiss that because of the alternative. An alien ship that can mimic domestic navigation light systems?
Yeah. Yep. And that's exactly what it did. And I later found out that they weren't only doing the, and the one who flew by me, it was all like lumpy looking. Like it wasn't done forming. Either they're forming into a perfect copy or they project something. I had one go in front of a bright tower light one night. It was over my neighbor's house. I heard like a vibration type of thing. And it made me go look outside, like, you know, something going to crash or something. It was like a, and it stopped. And it was real weird. It was like 4 a.m. And I went out on my deck with the camera because, you know, I thought, well, maybe this thing that was over my neighbor's house came back. And I saw what looked like, you know, could be a faraway plane, maybe something. And, you know, there was lights blinking on it, you know, like nav lights. And I actually had time to run in my house, run through the house, up onto the road, and up the road. It had to taken me several minutes to do that, to see this just cross the road. And it was flying very low and slow. It was foggy night, morning, a.m. And it actually took, so I started filming it, and it actually took 11 minutes just to cross the valley and go in front of a tower light. And when it went in front of the tower light, it looks like a bubble, you know, the blinking tower light, red blinking. You can, when I played the footage back, it looked like it was illuminating a bubble around this craft. So I really don't know if they project false images, you know, like a TV screenish type of effect. You know, if you're inside of a bubble and you want people to see something that you want them to see, you could project it to the inside of a bubble. Transparent bubble, maybe, because a lot of people were seeing the bubbles without being anything and in the daytime. So maybe they don't really form into a craft. Maybe they're inside this bubble the entire time. There's reports from other eyewitnesses I found that showed beings standing inside of a bubble. And with these little smaller spheres coming up that, you know, sucked electric off of the house, they act shy when they're busted by night vision. I have a Generation 3 night vision camera I progressed to because I figured there had to be more that I wasn't seeing. And the other people that were out in Nevada, they told me, just get one. And that was $3,200. So from a $250 camera to night vision, $3,200. It was something that just got under my skin, you know. Who are these things? They're coming here and they're sneaking around while we're sleeping mostly. Because, you know, I would stay up all night once I got that camera and I saw them coming and cruising over homes instead of the woods mainly that have old coal mines underneath, I found out.
Right. That's another interesting area to get into. And I just want to mention that time that you went out at night, I believe you were in your pajamas, and we played a clip from the audio of that video. I don't know if you still have that on your channel, but let's have a listen to that clip.
Thank you. know what made me look outside. I haven't been out of sleep tonight. Instead of feeling something was out there, I said, look. Look, he's gone down below the hill. Probably by the direction of Franklin Regional School. Be down over the hill from there. I think I landed right there, maybe.
Okay, that's just part of that video, Allison, that you described where you're chasing that UFO at night. So that was, I didn't realize that was such a breakthrough moment in determining a possible system for their holographic techniques.
Other people are reporting them. I read the UFO reports every day trying to find out, because our flap, it was heavy. It was multiple crafts, one night. November 13th, I think it was a Friday the 13th, 2009, some other guy who was a local that had seen them too was on his way trying to find where I kept telling people that I'm seeing these. And I just said, come to my house because this is crazy. There had to have been at least 70. This guy thinks over 100, but it started before he got there. But I'd say a safe estimate would be at least 70 objects. Were just swirling all around like it was going to be an invasion.
Wow.
It was invasion level. But then there was nothing for the next 3 days, and it was eerie quiet. And there was no what I call the hum sound. And if people look that up, there's thehum.info, I think is the website. Worldwide phenomenon that nobody can seem to find the origination of it. And there's now a map. And, you know, people trying to figure out, and you could record where you've heard it and what it sounds like to you. And the most common report of the ear witnesses is low frequency, like there's a diesel train idling underground. And that's what it sounds like. And I'm even hearing it a little bit right now at my river house. And that's north of Pittsburgh. I even heard it in Hestelin, Norway, when I was there for their science camp. Not up on the hills where the observation stations was, but down low where Erling Strand, the scientist that runs that, showed us the areas where actual crafts have been seen besides these plasma-type things. It was really loud to me. And you have to be in the 2-3% estimated of the population that can hear this, and I'm unfortunately one. I got to wear earplugs every night to bed. It's like a subwoofer-ish, like there's a subwoofer down in somebody's basement, you know, a couple levels down, just like that. There's recordings. Some people have been able to either duplicate it or actually record it, and nobody can explain what it is and why would you hear it some days and not others. And in the middle of the night, sometimes it's so loud it would vibrate pictures on the walls of the house that was in this area that had this quote-unquote flap of activity. So, but you don't put two and two and two plus, you know, two and four plus four together until you start exploring what other strange things are going on. You know, like the power outages. We blamed it on they were widening the highway. And I said, well, they must be moving telephone poles, and they're doing it in the middle of the night. After that highway was expanded, it still happened. And then I noticed that it only happened when the sky was clear. Then I noticed also that when it was raining and stuff, these things that were caught on the surveillance camera weren't showing up when it was raining or snowing or really thick clouds. So all these things you put together as the time goes on.
Right. You begin to really sharpen your observational powers. Now, I want to just go back for a minute to the morphing of these objects into domestic aircraft. And a lot of people are calling them fake planes. And a past guest, Jennifer O'Brien, was on the show, and she's from Toronto, and she was chronicling that phenomena where she lives. Well, it turns out that you guys actually know each other. Talk about her experience and maybe some similarities of maybe what's going on there with your area.
Yeah, I met her through Facebook. Like I said, there's a lot of groups, and the ability to form a group and keep it private and, you know, not tell the whole world you chase UFOs around in the dark, that was very helpful. And, you know, there was some main Facebook groups, and you could branch off. You find each other there, and then you go make your own little private group where you could talk freely without the people who are skeptics and call you crazy and all that. You can avoid all that. You can hook up with just other people that have also seen them and know they exist, and you don't have to listen to ridicule. So that's how I found her. And when she found out that I was the person in Pennsylvania who she saw my videos, and that's how, you know, gives you confirmation that you're not nuts for thinking these planes aren't really planes. And why are they silent, and why are they going in circles around you and diving into woods, you know, typically things like that, which her area is kind of wooded, I believe, too. I can't remember the details of everybody. There's got to be over 500 people now worldwide that I've heard from since 2009. I think I had a list of names of people just on YouTube, and that was over 200.
I remember that list.
Yeah. So beyond that, on Facebook, there's even more than that now. There's got to be probably 1,000-ish or more. And the people that have gotten dedicated and gone out like I had, you know. I mean, I would go out night after night. There has to be... I burned up a night vision scope that has a lifespan of 5,000 hours estimated minimum. I'm on my second one. I would estimate, you know, including the time I didn't even have that scope, I got over 10,000 hours because I was trying to figure out who are they, what are they doing, and why they keep showing back up and pacing over the woods. That's the main thing that they do that gives them the way, is being low and slow, silent, and pacing. They sweep back and forth. So I started investigating, what are they pacing over? And luckily, one of the aerial maps online showed our woods in winter when there was no leaves on the trees, and I could see patterns in the ground. Well, when I asked people who grew up there, you know, what's in this area here? What are those patterns? They said, oh, there's old coal mines, and the patterns are from the things collapsing, the mine shafts and all that are collapsing, and that's what shows the patterning. And then they told me about how there had been a fire, you know, 50 years ago or something in the mine, and they closed it in. They just bulldozed the end of it to try to put the coal mine fire out. And there's a train underneath stuck in the mine shaft. A whole train is buried in there, stuff like that. And then so I looked around, and I noticed that when I went to this one high hill that I could see, if the leaves are gone, I could see that all the hills that had the old coal mines were what they would stop over or just show up over. You could see them in night vision arrive, and they still look like a little dot moving. But the majority of people, you know, when they say that they just showed up and they just disappeared, that's probably not what happens, because they're still visible out of our visible spectrum. But the night vision can see them when they're, you know, invisible to eyes. So I had this group of people that they're doing a documentary film, and it's going to be really good when they're done. They started in 2015. They're out of Toronto, and they've traveled all over the world. They're the ones that actually took me to Hesteland, Norway, to the science camp last September, and which is a repeating area going back at least to the 80s, 1980s. I know I'm getting off track here.
Let me bring you back. Allison, so you suspect it could be possible there's some sort of mining effort, or they're interested in the minerals. I mentioned earlier in the introduction that the area that we're talking about is mineral rich, and there are lots of coal mines, as you pointed out. And in fact, there was a story today about Donald Trump opening the nation's first new coal mine in many years, and it's located in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh. Just to give listeners an idea of the resources in that area. Allison, what makes you suspect that there's a connection to the coal mines and this UFO activity?
Well, I search for, thank goodness for the internet again, because I was searching for reports that sounded like these same crafts that either were plasma and or changed shape specifically and listing the reports. And if they talked about that they went back and forth, anybody, any witness who saw them go back and forth, well, I would go and look at the geology report of what was underneath there. I wish I would have had the exact location of it, but, you know, just looking around the areas, I would look at the geology to see, did they have coal mines too? Some of them do. Some of them had iron, but the majority of them have high radon gas, which would be a decay of uranium underground. Because there's areas where they did that in the Netherlands, and they, as far as the people reporting told me or what I could find out, that they didn't have coal, so I eliminated that. Hmm. The high radon gas, some places they have not even measured it, like in Hestelin, I asked them, because they have iron ore. My area has iron ore. They weren't sure about coal being there, and they never took a test to do radon gas, but if I had to guess, it's probably got that, or maybe they like the iron ore. We don't know what their technology is, but I can only imagine that if you traveled all this way in a sphere-like bubble, you can't bring all the fuel you need to get back home or to go further without refueling. So the only thing that I can even guesstimate is that once they show up here, they pick up some fuel, and that pacing back and forth, these little spheres that are whizzing around that go and hit these crafts after they're done whizzing around doing whatever, or gathering something. I know they suck power off the lines, and I've even seen them come and suck a stream of something off a cable TV line, which I have no idea what they, either that or they're eavesdropping, downloading all our channels so they can watch it, I don't know, or internet, find out if we busted them, who knows.
Yeah, I wonder if they can translate that data.
Well, the one guy that was in Oregon, and some of the people in the groups have thought that, you know, he just filmed a reflection off of something, but some of his videos of what he said was a craft that would be parked next to the a lake or stream. It was a stream in the forest of Oregon. And it looked like there was something inside, and it looked like translucent shell, which that kind of fit. Mm-hmm. And it looked like somebody's flicking TV channels real fast. So that made me think, well, maybe that's why they suck off the cable TV line, you know, and they're looking for something, or their brains work so fast that they could play everything back high speed. The possibilities are endless, you know. This is all guesstimating, but every day I read the UFO reports online, and every day I have people sharing with me, usually on Facebook, because it's become the biggest area that you can share things. And, you know, bypass YouTube used to be it, but it got really excruciating. My channel got hacked. All my videos were deleted.
I wanted to talk with you about that, specifically about the interference that you endured, and it was really remarkable. You handled it pretty well. However, you did suffer loss. Let's start with the helicopter activity. Would you describe the frequency of helicopters coming into the area, and if they were military, what did they look like?
Oh, yeah. In fact, before we even knew, you know, about the power cuts being related to that, just when, like I said, my living room is like that Alpine-style glass, and it looked like a glowing light inside of a cockpit coming. My brother actually saw it. He says, look, look. But we could hear this chopper coming, you know, over the hill, and it was coming really low. We ran out on his deck, and all you could see was a cockpit with what probably is night vision goggles on a guy flying this obviously military helicopter, no nav lights on. So that was probably the first time that... And then we thought, well, it's just training because Pittsburgh International has a wing, but it's a refueling wing at the airport, which is 30 miles away approximately. And but, you know, the military is allowed to go and train anywhere they feel like it, right?
Pretty much.
So I just started noticing, because they're loud, like I said, even the life light, there's a life light that's probably about four miles away that sits a tiny little private airstrip where there's only two planes. And any time, you know, something would happen, you know, they go out with the life light and pick up people and take them to the hospital that's in Monroeville, the next bigger town over.
Mm-hmm.
I had a video where I went to that little airport and asked them if they were the ones that were pacing back and forth over the mines and stuff, and they, like, laughed at me and stuff. That's one of the videos that got deleted by the hackers. And obviously they weren't. They only have one life light, and they kind of laughed, you know, at me asking whether they would have any reason to be pacing over these woods that were next to the golf course. And that was good. So they really started. I really got harassed after I put that rebuttal thing, you know, because they were telling me, oh, that's, you got this airport and you got that airport and us. And then, and one by one, you know, I got radar reports and didn't show any hits for any of these things. You know, there should be, geez, there should be 10 airplanes flying right now. How come the radar report's empty? Pittsburgh's after about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. It's a pretty dead airport, and that's 30 miles away. These little private airstrips, they have potholes. Another guy from Canada even went there and filmed them. He said, look, there's potholes in the runway. You couldn't land at night unless you wanted to die, and one plane did crash trying to land at night. There's empty plastic 2-liter pop bottles over top of their nav lights on the ground, their landing lights or whatever you call it. So that's how run down it is. And they kept saying, oh, you got this airport, blah, 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 and that's where you're filming planes going and coming from, that little airport. I'm like, yeah, okay.
So you were off, you were able to offer real informed responses to a lot of the trolling, and it didn't silence them,
no.
But your field work was great, and I'm sure it was inspiring to a lot of people doing this work. There were Apache helicopters, if I recall, that you were talking about.
Yeah, Apaches, fully armed, you know, the little side things with guns on them. They would come out. In fact, one of the best busts I ever got of a craft actually leaving the woods where that cable line is, where they sucked off it, and where multiple people have been with me and seen them in the woods moving around, these little lit spheres and stuff, including a constable. That, and it was because that helicopter was around, and it was a clear night, and I thought, I wonder if they know somebody's already arrived to the woods. So I went over to the other side of the golf course, a high point, you know, where the clubhouse is. As soon as I got there, I saw it with night vision, the Generation 3 night vision. I could see, you know, look like a little glowing sphere leaving that woods. And then another one came, and it stretched out, going with the trees behind it. And I was like, thank God I finally caught him doing that, you know, because it's like 500-600 feet of thick trees. So for any debunker to try to say, oh, you're filming a plane in the sky way beyond those trees and showing through the trees. I mean, I had heard every excuse in the book, you know. So that was like my aha, in-your-face moment. I'm telling you, this is what they're doing, and this is where they're at. Come here and see it yourself, unless you're scared. And obviously they were. But 50 other people from all over, even an ex-MUFON investigator from Texas, drove up here with his son-in-law. And in fact, when they started popping out of the woods and doing that mini sun glowing thing, and that's a common thing, too, when they transform or expand size, they look like a mini sun pulsating and spitting and stuff, you know, and then they shrink down and then you see a craft. So something goes on during that. And I was trying to get spectra of the light to analyze what fuels is in it, you know, just like Hestelins, they found that scandium was one of the fuels making their light, that amberish color light that's a signature of them.
All right, Allison, let me back up. So you used a spectrometer?
I had a diffraction grating lens, you know, just a little cheap thing. You know, I'd wish I had the $20,000 spectrometer that Hariba has, and they provide them to NASA. And there was a scientist guy who was actually a debunker, and he, when he saw my stuff, he's like, yeah, I think you got something there. And I said, well, can you get me a trial to one of these real spectrometers? And he was actually working on that when his cancer got him, and he died on me. Yeah.
He's
the only person that with a scientific background like that that's offered any type of help like that besides the people in Hestelin, which they're kind of limited. Like, they're not allowed to get Generation 3 and above night vision over there because, you know, federal law. The people I went with from Canada, they had to get special permission just to go there and then come back from Canada. But you're not allowed to leave anything there, you know.
I want to get to the Hestelin lights trip that you went on to, but I want to also stay on the spectrometer and the work that you did to determine maybe what kind of fuel these craft are using or being powered from. Why was that of interest to you?
Well, it has to be in a super advanced technology. And, you know, you could film lights in the sky for the rest of your life, and what good is that going to do you? I want to know how they operate and how they can be, you know, silent and expand sizes, and what do they need? You know, the pacing over, I was trying to figure out what technology are they using that they would need to be near these mines or pace back and forth several times. What is going on during that? Because that always happened before they'd flare up and turn into crafts or projected craft or whatever. This expanding size thing from the smaller bubble-like spheres, I think, required some other fuel. And that pacing and that low sphere thing he's whizzing around must be gathering something they need to transform or whatever it is they're doing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it was bothering me not knowing. So I kept trying to figure out, you know, it was fission, fusion, you know, nuclear power interactions. Some people have reported high radiation readings after some have been near or sitting on the ground. So obviously that would require, you know, nuclear fission, right?
A cold fusion, a room temperature fusion, which I now understand does emit a certain amount of radiation, but nothing like the hot fusion. So potentially there's a nuclear reaction going on at around room temperature. It's possible. Were some of the people at the Hestelin Light site able to corroborate some of your findings with your diffraction lens?
Yeah, in fact, well, on mine, the scientist, the guy who died of his cancer, he said that it looked like yttrium could be a possible element. Now, I didn't know anything about, you know, calibrating, you know, against known fuel sources with that same lens. You're supposed to do it like right before or after you capture something. And I didn't know that at the time. And I actually got the glass lens that Erling Strand of Hestelin, the same brand that he used on his famous spectra that he got of the Hestelin lights in 1984-ish, I believe. They found, like I said, scandium as one of the elements. Now, theirs was a timed exposure. Older camera, you have to do timed exposure to pick up lights, you know. So I believe, because when I would see them with, you know, binoculars, I use good binoculars. I couldn't film through them, nor, you know, I had a spotting scope, but that takes forever to find something moving in the sky and try to zoom in on it while it's moving. It was too frustrating. I missed so many shots. But to see them, what they're doing when they flare up, it looks like tiny little colors, like a sparkler. When you look at a sparkler, all the little spitty colors that come out of them, it was similar to that. And I thought, well, maybe each color represents a different fuel interaction. Mm. So we got to try to figure out which other fuels are interacting with this fission-fusion process that's happening. Not sure what's going on there. But when they're in this bubble thing, they always seem to have like a neon green glow around them. And maybe that's reacting with our atmosphere, the anti-gravity. so many things that, you know, it's pretty wide open, and it's a challenge, you know. This is super advanced, and we don't have this technology, so we have to pick it apart to try to figure out, you know, what fuels are using and what processes are going on that allows them to do anti-gravity silently.
There's that, and we're also completely left to our own learning and studying, because the agencies that you would think would be studying this and maybe getting some of that information into the public sphere, well, they're not getting it out to us. In fact, they're lying to us. Mm-hmm. And so we have to do it on our own. And I think some of the work that you've undertaken in the UFO community has been remarkable. But again, it hasn't been without a significant amount of interference, which you seem to handle pretty well. Another example was somebody who said they were a former Homeland Security agent asked you to put your videos to private or delete them or else. Tell us that story.
Well, I had a letter in the mail, somebody who had found my address from, you know, their methods, and I actually called him, and he was ex-Homeland Security. He had been in that, and I guess he knows other high-level military people, and he just said that the harassment would increase if I didn't make my stuff private, which I did get a message from the people that hacked my account telling them me to make them private, you know, or else kind of thing, or let the games begin was his exact phrase. And I was like, you know, well, screw you, buddy. I don't think I'd be threatened by you, you know. And when they send your address, they know where you're at and stuff, you know. And I said, come on. We're out in the middle of nowhere. I have guns, too. So, and, you know, nobody ever showed up at my house. They were saying that we could drive by your house and wipe out your computers. We could do this to you. They even posted something in one of these chat things saying, oh, this crazy, you know, biatch woman, you know, go and could somebody put her out of her misery, asking people to come and kill me. That's how bad it got. And, you know, some of it was amusing, but when, you know, they started making, they hacked my daughter's Facebook account and took all her photographs and made a fake YouTube channel, putting her name on there, a picture saying, I love sex, and she was 14 years old. That kind of stuff. You know, so it just got really blatant. They even made funny videos and showed, you know, another local resident who had seen them and come out with me. They even made it sound like, you know, he was my lover on the side and tried to piss off my guy, you know, to think I was fooled around with these people that came to see them, all these 50 people that came, men and women, you know, somehow, you know, I'm cheating on him with them. That's how bad. It's really ridiculous. But there's so many ridiculous people online, including Facebook. YouTube was really terrible with that. Now it's moved to Facebook, and they have the troll force, they call them, and they just get big kicks out of torturing people. So it's good, you know, the Facebook, we've allowed to separate ourselves. The people who have seen them can prove it, and only want to talk to other people who have seen them to try to find out more answers and what equipment they can use, etc. That's where Facebook and probably Instagram and all those other ones have it too, but Facebook's the biggest one.
Okay, so they threatened to delete your videos. Did they delete videos? If so, how many? And how many videos did you have up to begin with?
Well, I had over 160. It was like 162-ish, something around there. And they found another troll who was a hacker, and he was called, I don't know if I should even give him, you know, props by saying what his name was. Yeah, I won't say his name because, you know, they get off on that. But I found him. It only took me a week. Lives outside of Dublin. I found him and had a cop informant from UK call him on the phone. His girlfriend answered while the motorcycle that he bought with somebody's hacked PayPal account was running in the background. So after he was the one that hacked, they got him because he was a good hacker and he had these programs to hack passwords and stuff like that. And once they had my email address that was linked to the YouTube channel, they hacked that, and then they pretend they don't know the lost the password to YouTube. He got that, went in and deleted all my videos. And a lot of them I didn't have backup. I had a backup drive, but it fell on the floor and broke, so the early videos are gone. So when I had this UK guy call him on the phone, and then I messaged him on YouTube, and I said, yeah, you know, the phone call you just got, we know where you're at, too. So he gave me back my channel and told me the password that, you know, he made, the new password. And I think it was debunked or something like that was the password. And I went and restored it. I restored what videos I did have copies of, I put back on there. And I have a lot that I leave private now. I don't even put them, you know, public. But, and he told me much respect in Gaelic. I said, you know, you're a human. You know, it took me a week to find you. These aliens are a lot harder to figure out. I appreciate being left alone while I do so. And share it with the findings with the rest of the world. Who cares?
But for some reason, Allison, they don't want you doing that. And even though they can't stop you and they can marginalize your work, what do you think is the motivation to keep this information out of the public sphere?
Well, because I think they can't do anything about it. And that's the first thing, you know, the public's going to ask them, oh, you know, what are you doing to stop these things from sneaking around and stealing power? And I hate to go there, you know, since you live so close to New York City, but I've actually found that guy that made videos about the 9/11 attacks. It showed spheres hitting the tower, too.
Yes.
Supposedly a video. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what his name is. But he has video, and somebody shot it, and it looked, from above, looking down, it looked like a sphere hit Tower 2, not a plane. And that just gobsmacked me in my head. Oh, my God, is that what really happened? Is that why they didn't find, like, parts of planes on the ground, supposedly? I wasn't there, so there's so much crap on the Internet now, I can't tell. But is that why they don't chase them anymore? Why they just leave them alone to do what they're doing, and there's no planes coming out to chase them.
Oh, that's a really strong point. I certainly thought about that, but these fears, it's consistent with some of the things that you're seeing in terms of the fake plane issue, where they're mimicking domestic aircraft. Oh, my God. It's very similar.
It's pretty heavy, isn't it? Pretty heavy. If that is true, we are at the mercy of whoever these things are. Some people say they're from the future. Some people say they're from a different dimension. Some people think that they're the ones responsible for all our religions going thousands of years. I've been trying to find answers, so I read everything and I throw it into the pot of possibilities. You know, nothing is solidified in my mind about who they are and what's going on. But, I mean, when you think about, like, the Star of Bethlehem, how they followed it until it moved over the manger, right? A star followed. Now, these things look like stars to normal people, stars that move. So could that be how long it's been going on? And are we just a terrarium with multiple things that have been created by some unknown whoever's, and they just come to see, you know, tending the terrarium to see how things are going? Don't know.
It's interesting that you bring that up. You sent me a response from someone you were talking with about ayahuasca in South America. I don't know if you remember this. This is quite a while ago.
Yeah, that was.
And she writes, as a background, I'm disabled and lived through enormous amounts of pain. So when I took it, I was looking for an answer from the Supreme about how could one person be in so much pain all the time. Staring up in the sky, I began to see linear lines, horizontal lines, some curving toward the middle and sweeping back up through the center. I was told they were lines that laid the earth, a blueprint, and that we called them ley lines. Once I was able to recognize something was trying to communicate with me, I mistakenly thought it was my, quote, inner self. The sky lit up with traffic, all, quote, uncloaked. I was sane enough to see regular air traffic, but through it, under it, almost like they were just behind a see-through curtain, quote, they were all there. Ships and orbs, a stunning red stargate with things I just honestly don't have the capacity to articulate. I'm sorry, I know that's frustrating. As the visuals started to settle, I could hear an overlapping swell of voices, questions, and almost like an interrogation. That's when I knew for sure this was not my inner self. You are not alone was the most disturbing one that resonated in all certain kinds of tones and voices. One of them asked, what do you know? In a very gruff, intrusive way that it threw me back. It thought I knew something very big, if I understand correctly. It told me so much, never answering my questions. A question, but then, before I could finish asking mine, it would be asking its own twice as fast. I got out, though, that we were seated here, the biggest genetic experiment ever. Not joking, it quickly flashed the millions of years of history before me. We're all in a four-walled science experiment all the time, similar to the Truman Show. It's both mechanical and biological. They told me they extrapolate mitochondria from females, that they are looking for the first Eve, which was just a name, not the Eve. Like any of that's real anyway, LOL. But on that note, they did mention we're in Christ consciousness, that they realized a long time ago that it's better to keep us in this state. That's pretty heavy stuff, but it does sort of connect to what you were saying, Star of Bethlehem and Terrarium.
Yeah, Planet Zoo, I called it after seeing this behavior. I mean, I'll never forget that night. I'll never forget that night, Friday the 13th, November 2009. Just the sky was swarming with crafts. Swarming.
This is the end of part one of the interview with Allison Cruz. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.